before we look at the readings, let's take a moment to reflect on Our Lady of Mount Carmel. It's one of the advantages of following the Anuam spirituality that we get the benefit of the liturgical life and also of Marian life. You know, the three aspects of the Anuam spirituality, Marian, liturgical, Eucharistic. So today we get both Marian and liturgical. In the official liturgy, this is an optional memorial. So I suppose there'll be places that won't even pay any attention at all to Our Lady of Mount Carmel because they don't have to. So. But the Anuam approach is to mind the riches of the liturgy, and this is one of them. As I've often said, that even if we're not Carmelites, today we are, because anyone who follows the liturgy is a Carmelite today, because we're honoring Our Lady of Mount Carmel and we're under her maternal protection. The devotion to Our Lady of Mount Carmel is rooted in ancient history. It's unlike most Marian feast days, which have a very clear connection to a historical event, an apparition or a biblical aspect of Mary's journey. In the case of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, we have to go back to the Old Testament and to the place of Mount Carmel in the culture of the Jews. Mount Carmel was a place of beauty and of devotion. It's especially connected to the prophet Elijah, because it was on Mount Carmel that Elijah had this great contest with the prophets of the pagan god Baal, and God revealed himself as the true God. So by extension, going to Mount Carmel, not necessarily physically, but at least spiritually, going to Mount Carmel is to go to the place of true religion, of pure religion, to go to the place where paganism is defeated and the true God reveals himself. So that's what we do, because that's what Mary leads us to do, always to go to the real God, the one who really is God. After that contest between Elijah and the prophets of Baal, the people cry out, "The Lord is God, the Lord is God." That's the declaration that fits Our Lady of Mount Carmel. She points us to the Lord. Okay, so that goes way, way back. Of course, Elijah, I mean, the Carmelites have a special devotion to Elijah, but Elijah didn't know Our Lady the way we know her. Mary wasn't even born yet, so that's a more of a mystical connection. But in the early church, and for centuries, people went to Mount Carmel as a place of prayer, of spiritual refuge, and of pondering the beauty of God in creation. It wasn't up until, was it the 12th century, 13th century, when the monks who were under the protection of Our Lady of Mount Carmel started to get identified as Carmelites. And then the turning point for the Carmelites is the apparition of Our Lady to Saint Simon Stock. 13th century sometime, I'm sorry, I don't remember the date it is, but sometime in the 13th century. And Saint Simon Stock is a little bit of a mystery himself, because there isn't that much historical support for his existence and for the apparition that's attributed to him. But anyway, something happened to give the Carmelites the awareness that Mary was entrusting to them this special garment, the scapular. By the way, Saint Simon is an Englishman, and I've been reminding everybody of the greatness of English Catholicism. Well, here's another example of it. The Catholicism of England is really, really rich, and there's just so many examples of it. So when we make our pilgrimage to Catholic England, maybe we can visit the tomb of St. Simon Stock. I don't know. It must be buried in a Carmelite monastery someplace in England. He's from England. Anyway, so you can't honor Our Lady of Mount Carmel without reflecting a little bit on the scapular, the brown scapular of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, which is so often misunderstood. It's a sign of belonging to Mary. It's a sign of being under the mantle of Mary, under the protection of Mary, under her maternal care. It's not a magical charm. And there are so many versions of the scapular that this can be confusing. I think I've shared this before too, and people arguing about what a scapular is supposed to be like, how big it's supposed to be, what it's supposed to be made out of. A few years ago, someone told me that it has to be 100% pure wool or it won't work. Well, that makes it sound like the magic is in the wool. If you don't have enough wool, well, then you can't. But see how it turns it into a magical amulet. But I have seen scapulars that are so small that you can't wear them. You know, they become little charms, and then they put them on the bracelet, or they put it on a little, I don't know what, rearview mirror. If you can't wear it, meaning over your head, you can't wear it over your shoulders, it's almost by definition not a scapular anymore, because scapular is something you put on your shoulders. You wear it. So aside from what it's made out of and how big it is, it's something to wear. It's a garment. It's a uniform. It's a habit. But it does not have power in itself to save us from damnation. It's a sign of our being under the protection of Mary, and a very powerful sign. It's a sacramental. So yes, wear the scapular, and by wearing it, identify yourself as a child of Mary. Even in the secular world, people acknowledge that a different clothing changes people's behavior. If a policeman is wearing his uniform, he acts like a policeman. And if he's wearing just regular clothes, he doesn't act like a policeman. If someone is wearing their uniform at the office, they know they're on duty. And if someone is wearing their religious habit or religious garment, that it doesn't change the person, but it does help the person live out his or her identity as a religious person. So it's something like that. So the wearing of a scapular helps us be who we are. And it reminds us that we're under Mary's care. So the promise to those wearing the scapular that they will be saved is associated with Mary's work of placing us under the care of Jesus. So it has less to do with the garment itself than to what it signifies. I think that should be clear to everyone. Okay, so we're all Carmelites now. Remember St. Simon Stock, he lived way before the reform of the Carmelite order, before the discalced. That was just in the ancient roots of the Carmelite devotion. Okay, well, let's take a brief look, at least at the Gospel here. Jesus compares the towns where he has been doing his public ministry to towns that were notorious for their wickedness. The towns he has been preaching in, Chorazin, Bethsaida, and Capernaum, the towns in the area on the northern shore of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee. I don't know how far that is from Mount Carmel. We were supposed to go to the Holy Land last year, remember? But the war prevented it. Maybe we would know. But anyway, these are like local towns. Someone from Nazareth would know these towns. The other towns, Sidon, Tyre, Sidon, and especially Sodom, they were not Jewish towns. They were pagan towns. Well, Sodom was a Jewish town, but it went bad. It went perverse. And the point Jesus is making here is, if those wicked cities had the advantage that you have, they would have repented. So you who have had the advantage of my public ministry, you have no excuse. And on the day of judgment, that's going to be held against you. Now, this is a warning passage. It's an effort to stir us to conversion, to not take for granted the advantages that we have. Because if those who had far less advantages responded better than we do, well, that's going to be counted against us. I have often cautioned people not to make comparisons, not to compare themselves to other people. This is one of the traps in the spiritual life, and especially in the era of social media, people always compare themselves to what they see in the social media. Oh, my classmate has a successful business and I don't. My classmate is rich and she made a trip to Boracay and I can't do that. And they went shopping in Hong Kong and here I am stuck in Las Piñas. And people do this all the time when they go on Facebook. They see all the great things that other people have, other people do, and then they start to get jealous, or envious, I should say, envious. So that kind of comparison works against us, and that's why we have to be cautious against making comparisons. But Jesus is not afraid to make comparisons as long as we use them for our conversion. So that's when we look to what other people have done with less than we have, and we should be moved to greater response. So that's the right use of comparison. And this is what we do, actually, when we look to the lives of the saints. We say, my goodness, these saints, they did extraordinary things, and they had none of the advantages we have. Well, on this feast of Our Lady Mount Carmel, we are being reminded to stir into flame the gifts that we have. And we are privileged to be a Marian people, to be spiritual children of Mary. Things that the people of Chorazin and Bethsaida and Capernaum, they didn't know anything about this. They didn't even know Mary. Or if they knew her, all they knew about her is that she's the mother of Jesus. They didn't know her extraordinary role in God's plan of salvation. We know. So we have a greater advantage, but we also have to respond to that grace with greater faith, with greater love, with greater dedication to the good of others, with hearts that are more like Mary's heart, with faith that it's more like Mary's faith. We in Anuem are praying every day for Mary's faith. Open the eyes of our hearts with your faith. And we do that again today on this feast to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. We ask her to open the eyes of our hearts with her faith, to transform our hearts to be like her heart, to protect us under her mantle, under the scapular, so that we can be confident in salvation in Jesus Christ.